Silence.
Oppenheimer!
I think they're talking about us. No way.
I myself am strange and unusual.
This is Nerd Pride Radio!
Nerd alert!
These nerds are a threat to our way of life.
See, this is the stuff that brings nerds together.
So it's sort of social. Demented and sad, but social, right?
If I'm interested in it, then by definition, it is nerdy.
Are you in loser denial or something?
I'm a nerd, and I'm pretty proud of it.
My dad's a nerd.
And welcome to episode 176 of Nerd Pride Radio. 176 Aduna is a pretty good-sized asteroid out in the main belt. 122 kilometers across, fairly good size, but not even the top 100 of the stones that are out there. So that's not the important one, though. All right. The most important thing that comes out with the number 176 is my buddy Kaz pointed out to me that 176 is an odious number. Odious. All right. That's a great word to start with. And what makes a number an odious number? Well, when you express it in binary, it has an odd number of ones in it, which would mean somewhere close to half of all numbers, or at least half of all positive counting numbers, are going to be odious numbers. All right, so they're odious. What's the other half? Evil. Yeah, apparently all positive counting numbers are either odious numbers or evil numbers. Whoever came up with that, those names was having a really good time with it. Apparently, because look, I've seen cake numbers and I've seen happy numbers and I've seen lucky numbers and I've seen, well, now we've got odious and evil. So anyway, enough of the number stuff. Ask me how I'm doing today. Go on. Ask me. I am awesome. My name is Mike Jones and I am a D&D/Pathfinder nerd, a history nerd, a sci-fi nerd, a comic book nerd, computer nerd, movie nerd. I said, comic book nerd, computer nerd, movie nerd, comic nerd, science nerd, gaming nerd plus. There's like seven other kinds of nerd. I only wish I was nerdy enough to be. You are listening to Nerd Pride Radio, the place I go every week to haver on about all the nerd stuff that just won't fit in my skull anymore. Our sponsor this week, Mars Needs Cows, brand new game from my buddy Kaz again. And actually, I think other than him, I'm the only one who has a copy of the cards. So we're going to play test it this weekend at my son's birthday and see how it goes. Him and his friends are really excited about a chance to get to try this out. So I'm excited as well. It's going to be fun. Now, I say that I am awesome, but man, it's been a long week. It's been a really long week. I'm a little tired and getting a little spacey. So, if I sound a little loopy tonight, that's what's going on. And, I'm just going to go until I run out of stuff. All right, my meticulously plotted portion is not going to be all that meticulous this week, as it was last week. But I'll just keep going. And when I get tired, I get tired, and then we'll step out. But you know what? Before I even get to the meticulously plotted portion, updates! Hey, guess what? 4 years ago this weekend, we got our guinea pig. Our guinea pig, Alice, who was a hairless guinea pig. Actually, we got two guinea pigs that day. We got Alice, and we got Cheshire. And Cheshire has since passed. But Alice is over 4 years old, because I'm sure she was, at least 2, 3, 4 weeks at the time we got her. So she is over 4 years old, and she still ain't dead. That is amazing for any guinea pig. Didn't have anything really to say about it other than, yep, still alive. All right. Anyway, enough of that. Meticulously plotted portion of the podcast. This is the time for me when I talk about whatever's been on my mind for the last week. If something strikes me as interesting during the course of my busy week, I add it to my master list, and the very best stuff off of that list is going to get spewed out all over you guys every week when I record. You lucky dogs. And straight into it. Again, not going to do segments this week. I am just going to, in fact, you know what? Let's put in the fingertips music.
Fingertips. Fingertips. Fingertips.
That's right, fingertips. When I'm not doing a whole lot of research, I'm just kind of going to skip through my master list, clear up some stuff that's been on here a while, just talk about them fast. Nothing big, nothing serious. So, first up, TRAPPIST-1. You guys have all heard about it. TRAPPIST-1 is a dwarf star that is 39 light years away from us, and it happens to have seven Earth-sized planets going around it. Seven Earth-sized planets. And when I say Earth-sized, I mean, like, right about Earth-sized. Like, close. Wow. That's really amazing. And seven is a phenomenal number. Now, because this thing is a dwarf star, these things are orbiting in super close, all right? Like, the closest of them has a year that is a day and a half long. And then the farthest of the seven has a year that is 20 days long. All right, so these suckers are just winging around this star. And because, I mean, they are in close. Someone compared it to this star is actually about 80-something times the size of Jupiter, but said roughly the TRAPPIST-1 and its seven nearby Earth-sized planets, TRAPPIST-1 and its planets are roughly about the same size as Jupiter and its four big moons. So if you want to compare, you know, compare that for size. And it's just crazy. And so what does this mean that it has seven Earth-sized planets? All right. Well, it means a lot of cool things. First, three of those seven are in what is known as the Goldilocks zone, the area that is most conducive to having liquid water on it and thus most conducive for life as we know it. Super cool. Now, that doesn't mean that the others couldn't have liquid water. They might under the right conditions. The others could have life under the right conditions. Now, downside to that, I found out that because of the configuration of the system, all seven of those planets are probably tidally locked to their star, to TRAPPIST. Which means, when I say tidally locked, that means all seven of them, like our moon, the moon always has has the same side facing the Earth. All seven of these planets have the same side of their planet facing their star at all times. So like Mercury, they don't rotate. And so like Mercury, they have a hot side and a cold side. And then they have the terminus, the perimeter band around its equator there, the border between light and dark, which is going to be the area most likely to have temperatures conducive to life, which, man, that is a narrower opportunity than we were thinking. But okay, all right, we'll take that one. But the more I look at TRAPPIST and its seven planets, the cooler they are. There's just so much to love about this system. Now, SETI has gone through it. There's already scans of this star showing that, you know, over millions of possible broadcast bands of radio signal, TRAPPIST and its planets are not sending off any recognizable radio signals at all. So, which, you know, didn't expect that they would, but man, would have been cool. I mean, if we're looking for life, we're probably not looking for intelligent life. We're just hoping for any life. So how are we going to find it at 39 light years away? Because, you know, even with our best technology, that's still several million years to make the round trip. So we're probably not doing that right off. But you know what we can do? And this is amazing. We only know that the planets are there because all seven of the planets happen to pass the disk of their planetary system is tilted exactly towards us so that we get to see all seven of the planets pass in front of the star. And we can tell, you know, by how much the star dims, we can tell which planet it is, how often it's going around us, how big it's going to be, what its orbital period is. We can learn all sorts of stuff just watching them pass in front of their star. All right. But better than that, if we had a powerful enough telescope, what if we could tell how the light changes based on the atmosphere of the planet as it passes in front of the star? Because, okay, you got to imagine, here's your star, here's your planet passing in front of it. That planet is just a little pea-sized thing passing in front of the disk of the star, all right? So it's already pretty small. And so the amount of space around the edge of it where light passes through the atmosphere of the planet to get to us is even more minuscule. We're talking about, you know, one part per million, parts per many millions. I mean, it's just a tiny little difference that atmosphere makes. But man, if we had a powerful enough telescope, we could analyze the difference that that atmosphere makes, and we could tell what that atmosphere is made of. All we need is a sensitive enough telescope. Well, guess what launches next year? That's right. October of 2018, so a little over a year and a half from now, we're going to be launching James Webb Space Telescope, and you know the TRAPPIST is going to be one of the top items on their list. I mean, I'm sure James Webb already has, you know, a list 18 miles long of all the stuff that it just has to look at on its first day, and it's not going to get to all this for a while. But TRAPPIST is going to be high up there as one of the really cool ones to get a look at when James Webb has time. So the James Webb Space Telescope is going to go ahead and take a look at TRAPPIST and check out the atmospheres of the various planets as they pass in front of their star, and then be able to tell us from that, are there signs of certain methane production or ozone production that would be indicative of life on that planet? Or I don't know what other signs of life there might be, but there are certain things that we can see in an atmosphere that simply don't happen without life being there. There's lots of processes, lots of things that we can see where life is one of the explanations of them. But, you know, there's always other explanations that are maybe more likely. But there are certain things we can look for in an atmosphere that if life is not present, to see an atmosphere configured that way would be unbelievably unusual, and we would have to look for some other process. I mean, if it's not life, then we got to figure out something that could do that that we are previously unaware of. So this is going to be cool stuff. And we've got James Webb to thank for giving us this peek next year. I'm so excited about it. But here was one of the other things is that because I'm listening to this is from, this part of it is from the Astronomy Cast that I listen to. And again, I still highly recommend the Astronomy Cast. Man, you guys should be listening to that. It's awesome. But they said that they were talking to someone else, some other scientist. Maybe it wasn't from them. Oh man, I can't remember. Maybe it was some online article I read. I should write these things down. But anyway, some scientist had commented that, you know, if you had asked me, you know, a year ago, you know, could we use the James Webb Space Telescope to look at the atmosphere of another planet, you know, see the light shining through it on an exoplanet around another star? And could we use James Webb to look at that atmosphere and tell you what it's made of and look for signs of life and all that? And the guy said, you know, if you'd asked me a year ago, I would have said, well, theoretically, technically, yeah, you could, but, you know, the conditions would have to be so perfect. I mean, you would have to have a star that's close enough, but it's got this size and the planets would have to be, you know, planet would have to be organized or, you know, orbiting it really, really close. And it would have to be, you know, he would have said, yeah, it could happen, but come on, what are the chances? And he's like, here it is. Not only is it perfectly lined up, but it's perfectly lined up for us to do it with seven planets off the same star. What an opportunity that is. I mean, it is really phenomenal. So super excited. It would be even cooler to, you know, get an actual look at them, see colors and landmasses and just because pictures are so cool. We don't have to have that, but man, wouldn't it be nice? Oh, anyway. All right. That was TRAPPIST. Next off my master list. Okay, it says countdown/Jacob? Okay, my son Jacob has been waiting for his Nintendo Switch to show up, which it did show up on Friday, so 3 days ago as you guys are listening to this. And or if you're listening later, go look up when the Nintendo Switch came out. Whatever. Anyway, he was so excited because he bought the Nintendo Switch solely for the reason that he wants to play Legend of Zelda, Breath of the Wild, on the Switch, as it's intended by God to be played. And so because he's a huge Zelda fan, loves everything Zelda, Jacob is committed enough to this that he makes it a pilgrimage once a year to go through every Zelda game and solve them all. And he does every single one of them once a year. And that's just his mission to walk back through this history. And he can tell you all of the convoluted diverging, and loop-de-loop timelines that go along with Legend of Zelda, he knows all of them. He understands how they relate to one another, what order they happen in, which ones caused the other ones to branch off, which ones are... Anyway, he understands all that. I have no idea. So for him, Breath of the Wild was this huge thing. And he actually had a countdown clock going for a week and a half, 2 weeks, countdown clock on his computer that every time he opens his machine, oh, there it is. Oh, 6 days, 14 hours, 21 minutes. And, you know, I mean, he was insane. Could not, I gotta tell you, multiple messages every day. Multiple messages. I don't know if I can wait anymore. Oh my God, I'm so excited. Oh, I can't wait. Oh, look at all this new stuff. I found out about it. Oh, look at this behind the scenes stuff. Oh, here's some people who play tested it. Just stop. Stop. I mean, look, I get awesome game. It's going to be amazing. And you know, the first few times I get it, but oh man, he's been so obsessed. It's just been, I'm so glad that it got there because now he can't do anything but play the game, which means he's not bothering me about it anymore. But what little I get from him, the thing is just as good as he was hoping. He has some reviews out there. He's putting them on Facebook so that he is saying, yeah, the Switch has some flaws and here's this and here's that. But, oh, Breath of the Wild is amazing. And so he's having a really good time. So I wrote it down. This would have been better if I had talked about it last week, maybe, while the countdown was still going on. But, you know, hey. Now it's over. So all over but the shout. And I haven't seen it myself. Aiden went on over there and spent the night last night. And so they had a marathon session of Breath of the Wild together. And according to Aiden, unbelievable game. Absolutely awesome. Had a wonderful time. So if you had any question about the Switch or about Breath of the Wild, I mean, you know, certainly you can ask Jacob or ask me and I'll pass it along to Jacob. But yeah, if you need his recommendation, he's going to say, ooh, go for it. Go for it because it's awesome. So there you are. All right. Next on my list, it just says, I love you. So you know what? I love you. There you go. I had some commentary to make when I wrote this down. I think I wrote it down after last week's episode because I end every episode with telling you guys that I love you. Thank you for showing up. I love you. You're awesome. Can't wait to see you next week. That's how I end every single episode. So I don't know. I wrote it down after the last episode because I guess, I don't know. I want you guys to know I mean it. I'm not just being facetious. I may not be good enough yet to love all of mankind. I may not be able to, love, you know, all of my neighbors as myself, to be able to love my enemies. That kind of stuff, you know, working on it. But you guys are awesome. I mean, you guys are so cool. And therefore, let me tell you what, you're in my circle of friends. I love you guys because you're great. All right. And so, I'm not just saying that. You guys are the best. Seriously. Smart, good looking too. Not that that's relevant, but it's true, right? All right. So enough buttering you guys up. I wrote it down there. I've addressed it. So, what comes after that? Let's see, now. There it is. Episode 176. That's this one. And let's see, countdown. I love you. Oh, Trent Frank, Republican, man. God, he was on CNN. And he's some sort of congressman from somewhere. I don't even remember what he was talking about. What I wrote down is Trent Frank, CNN, immigration, nukes, lip. Weird. All right. Took me a while to translate why I wrote this down. All I know is Trent Frank was on CNN. He was in an interview and apparently he talked about immigration and he talked about nuclear weapons. And in doing so, the man made a complete ass of himself because he was just, it was some ignorant and hateful positions he was taking. And my problem was, as I'm looking at him and I'm watching him, I'm like, wait a minute. Does that man have a cleft lip? God, he looks like he does. Man, I hope not. And then I look it up. And I'm like, oh, yeah, damn it, he does. And it's not that that matters. I mean, you know, if you've got a cleft lip, you can be good. You can be bad. You can be, you know, it has no bearing on who you are as a person. It's just a physical fact of your birth. Okay, I get that. But as a person who has a cleft lip, But it still bugged me that Trent Frank is making me look bad. Damn you! I can't. God, you gotta come on, stand up for our people, man. This is our. Oh, jeez. All right, and it was stupid and silly, and yet I still felt that because you know it's a cleft lip. You feel a little kinship with other people who have shared the same plight, as it were. Not that I've suffered terribly in my life for having a cleft lip. Certainly not the way other people that I know have suffered because. For some people, it's more severe depending on the quality of their surgery, depending on how serious the deformity was at birth, there's lots of things that go into it. And me personally, I have suffered very little, as a result of my cleft lip. I've had, a bunch of surgeries, to get it fixed up, but you know, they were all paid for by the military, so it's not like I got anything to complain about. And, maybe once I had a person make fun of me for it, but I was young and too stupid to realize that I was being made fun of. I didn't even understand what it was about. It was weird. So, you know, it's not like it's as much of a hardship for me, but I still, again, I feel this kind of kinship, towards other people who have the cleft lip, cleft palate thing going on. And, my Trent Frank, I just don't even know if I want you in the club, man. Seriously, I think you're gonna have to turn in your cleft lip card because I don't want you representing me. That's all I'm saying. All right. Is that stupid? Yeah, it's really stupid. But hey, that's why it's fingertips. So, let's see. Iron Age magnet pots. This is one that I needed to do more research on. Yancey brought it up to me and I thought it was interesting, but, I would have to do more research to make it fun and relevant to you guys. And it was never interesting enough to go do the research, but essentially it was an article that pointed out that, during the Iron Age, when you're making pots that are made of iron, or can have a lot of iron in their construction, because of the way they're fired and cast, you can tell a lot about the magnetic strength of the Earth's the strength of the Earth's magnetic field at the moment that the pot was cast. And if I remember correctly, because a lot of times we find Iron Age artifacts. And when you find the Iron Age artifacts, you have an idea of when, you know, the general range of when this thing was constructed. But, you know, it's not terribly exact. But with some of these pots, I believe, if I remember correctly, because the pots are painted, inscribed, marked with specific events, you know, it's like a signature on them that tells you that, oh, yeah, it was created in this year. Or created in this range of Iron Age. We had recognizable histories during the Iron Age that we can kind of cast those into, right? Yeah, of course we did. So, so the idea is from these, we have a much closer idea of, you know, exactly what year, you know, with the, you know, give or take a few, this thing was made. And based on that, you can then measure from the way the atoms, line up in the pot. You can measure the strength of the Earth's magnetic field the year that this thing was cast. That's pretty cool. And so based on that, if you get enough of these, you get a pretty good chart of the ups and downs of the Earth's magnetic field and how it changed over the years, you know, thousands of years ago. And again, interesting, but not interesting enough for me to go do the full research to find out what we can learn about this. I mean, look, it's not like seven planets around TRAPPIST, right? Yeah, exactly. Arctic tourism. Do I want to save Arctic tourism? I think I might. The general gist of this is that the polar ice caps are melting. I mean, we're all aware of that, right? And you can believe in climate change or not believe in climate change. Go right ahead. But it doesn't change the fact that the Northwest Passage is open, people. The Northwest Passage is open enough of the year that we can reliably get ships around the north side of Canada. If you weren't sure about it, the Northwest Passage means an ocean route around the north end of Canada. All right, literally, you can go from the Atlantic Ocean to the Pacific Ocean on the north side of Canada through the Northwest Passage. All right, going through the Arctic Ocean. And normally, the Arctic Ocean is pretty reliably blocked up with ice because it's the Arctic, for God's sake. And in recent years, it turns out that the Northwest Passage is open enough of the year to make it worthwhile to start going that way. All right. So again, whether or not you believe in climate change, the polar ice caps are melting. The ice is disappearing up there and ships can get through. And so we've got little towns up there, little towns on the north end of Canada. All right. So tiny places, remote places. And these are places that might have seen in the past one or two, four ships come through during the course of a year. Like during the warmest months, the bravest ships would be making it through. Now there's cruise ships, like bringing tourists through. And they're looking at getting, you know, upwards of 70, 80 boats a year coming through here. And it's crazy because, first off, do you know how bizarre the economy is that far north? I mean, the idea that you're getting stuff that we take for granted, you know, frozen dinners and stuff that we would pick up at Walmart or the supermarket, and we'd pick up a frozen dinner for like $4, $5. You know, like a bag of chicken nuggets. That was one of the items that they gave an example of. A bag of chicken nuggets that around here, you know, you're going to pay $5 or $6 for. In one of these north end towns up in Canada, the day after the supply ship comes through and everything gets all stocked up again, the day after the supply ship gets there, you can buy that bag of chicken nuggets for about $30. All right. And that's the day after. If that bag of chicken nuggets is still available, like 3 weeks later, you know, before the next supply ship is anywhere close, it may be a lot more than that. So, and they are, you know, it's not like you've got, you know, huge, reliable, you know, citywide plumbing systems. I mean, people are relying on their cesspools and this sort of thing, their septic tanks. And, septic tank was the word I wanted to use. And thus, when a cruise ship comes in, a cruise ship where, you know, a couple hundred, several hundred passengers disembark to come see the native flora and fauna, to watch the natives play, and whatever it is that they do, get their pictures of the local scene. Where do they go to the bathroom? Well, 300 people show up for a day. Where do they go to the bathroom? Because my septic system is designed for, you know, my family to use over the course of a year. You suddenly have, you know, even if it's the local community center or whatever it is, that thing's not designed for 100 people to come in one day and all take a dump in my toilet, all right, that much urine filling up the septic tank all at once, it's going to throw it off and it's going to break shit and it's bad. And so these ships will show up and literally the town has to say, yeah, sorry, you can't crap here. Sorry. Yep. The bathrooms are for locals only. Don't want to be rude, but you're going to break our town. And, you know, they want the tourist dollar. They want that money coming through, but they also don't have the infrastructure to handle it either. So what do you do? I guess I'm going to do this segment now. I guess maybe I'm not putting it off till later. How's that? I always do this. And not to mention the fact that a lot of these Arctic tourists are people who are making their way up there because they want to be the first ones among the first ones to see this area of the world as it's opened up, because they know that 5 years from now, 10 years from now, whatever way of life is up there is not going to be the same anymore. This is a whole culture that's going to be lost or taken over by some other, you know, other factors, and that things are going to change. And this is your last chance to see it in its quote unquote native pristine state. It's really kind of a white thing to do, and it's very self-serving. And the people who I heard interviewed about it, they're like, yeah, you know, look, on the one hand, the money that they bring in is good for us. On another positive note, they do create an awareness of what's going on, an awareness of our people, an awareness of the changes that the melting ice has brought, the seriousness of this situation. There's all sorts of stuff that goes on here that is potentially good, but at the same time, again, it's a bunch of very white, very wealthy tourists coming through, And what you wind up getting is you wind up getting people who maybe don't quite get it. You know, they said that, you know, one woman said that here come these tourists coming through, taking pictures, and just grabbed their toddler out of the yard. This woman said, just grab the toddler out of the yard and moved it over here because, you know, we'd like to get a picture with the little native toddler, but we want to get the glacier in the background. And so therefore it would work. And like, didn't ask, you know, just grabbed someone else's child because, well, it's just part of the scenery. It's the natives. It just makes you queasy to even talk about it, doesn't it? So there were just so many things about this particular situation that is interesting, concerning, weird, stuff that I had never thought of before, would never have thought of before, and obviously don't know nearly enough about. But I'm trying to remember what podcast I originally heard this stuff on. I believe it was the Flash Forward podcast. So if you look at Flash Forward and go back a couple of episodes to the Arctic tourism episode, I don't remember the exact title, but it'll be obvious from the title that it's the right episode. It was really interesting stuff. And I was just totally hooked on it. So I wrote down Arctic tourism. And of course I took no other notes. So I'm just working from memory here. So, if I've gotten anything wrong, that is entirely on me. All right. You know what? We're going to call that good. That's the end of our fingertips. Excuse me. I don't know what that was. That's the end of our fingertips. And now we're going to turn it over to the Pod-O-Matic. Oh, I turned him off. Let's try it again. Pod-O-Matic. Hot dog. This is the Nerd Pride Radio Pod-O-Matic. At the end of every podcast, I bring out R2, that's him, in his fully pimped out Pod-O-Matic bubble, and he rolls up random topics for me to talk about. And where do these topics come from, you ask? Well, I'm so glad you asked, because that is where you come in. If you want to hear me haver on about something, you send your question or topic to me by email, or better yet, in a private message on my forums at nerdprideradio.com/nerds, and I will add it to my Pod-O-Matic list. Pod-O-Matic is about whatever you want it to be. Whew. All right, I made it through. Let's get over to the Pod-O-Matic list. And my first number is 97. Let's head on down to the bottom of the list and see what that means. 97 comes from someone named Kyle. Hello, Kyle. And Kyle says, how many pillows do you sleep with, and do you use a clutch pillow? I sleep with one pillow. I have one very flat pillow. Like, it is so flat, it almost could just be like a towel folded in half inside of a pillowcase. That's how flat my pillow is. It's just got to provide just the barest amount of cushion between my arm and my head, because I always sleep on my stomach with one arm underneath my head. If I'm at a hotel and I have forgotten to bring my own pillow with me, there are no hotel pillows that are flat enough for me. You cannot find them flat enough. And so thus I have to adjust my sleeping position. I don't get to have my arm under my head. And it just becomes weird. And I don't like sleeping without my pillow. So that's my one pillow that I use. And if my pillow eventually crumbles and falls apart, as it always does, then what I do is, I find whoever in the house has the flattest pillow, and that now becomes my pillow, and I'll go buy them whatever the hell pillow they want. Because you can't buy a flat enough pillow for me. So, that's the one I use. Now, you didn't ask, but in general, I sleep with the one pillow and no blankets. Somewhere months ago, someone said that you sleep better if you sleep without blankets. You sleep better if your body is a few degrees cooler. And thus, you sleep better because your body is designed to sleep at a lower body temperature. Okay, so I tried it out. And at first, it's weird. At first, it's weird because you tend to wake up in the middle of the night for the first few days. You wake up in the middle of the night thinking you're freezing to death. Now, and again, if you're the kind of person, if you keep your house at, you know, 60 degrees or below at night, relying on the blankets to keep you warm, then okay, this doesn't apply to you. If it's midwinter and you turn your heat way down at night, in order to save energy, then you're going to need some blankets. But if you keep your house at a relatively comfortable temperature, then yeah, I don't use any blankets. And I have no idea if the whole, you know, lower your body temperature and you get a better night's sleep thing. I don't know if that's actually true or not. I know that it works for me. I feel like it works for me. It's completely anecdotal though. And I still have a blanket that's just mine. But, so if I wake up usually, oh, I don't know, my alarm goes off at 5. So if I wake up after 4 o'clock, sometimes I will pull the blanket up and decide to wrap myself up with it and slowly warm up until 5 o'clock. And I'll do that. But yeah, most of the times I just don't have a blanket. So anyway, for what it's worth, 97 again. I think R2's broken. There we go, 55. I like that a little better. 55 comes from a person I will call Kyle. Hey, Kyle. And Kyle says, they say that zero-calorie sodas are bad for you because your body reacts to them, producing insulin, etc., the same way it does as if they were sugar. So why do you drink them? Isn't water good? Yeah, water's great. I love water and I drink plenty of water, nowadays. But I do still like the soda because I like getting the caffeine from it. I drink coffee in the mornings. And so usually I don't, the way my system works now, because I've slowly become convinced that yes, diet sodas do not make you fat. I still don't believe that diet sodas make you fat. It's a, you know, if you're maintaining your calories, you know, diet soda is not going to make you bulk up. But I also will agree that diet sodas, because they mimic sugar, aren't great for your body, though. They're causing your body to crave more sugar, and that's probably not good for you. But, so, all right. So based on that, I have altered my caffeine intake patterns so that I am drinking coffee in the morning. Usually I have it's usually just a big cup of coffee in the morning. So, I mean, and it's a big mug. So it's like worth about 2 cups of coffee. So I drink that first thing in the morning when I get to work. And then usually if we're both in the office, Yancey and I will make a second pot of coffee for the afternoon. And when I say pot, it's just enough to, we measure it out. So it just barely fills our 2 mugs, exactly to the top. So a lot of times, not every day, but a lot of times we'll have a second one in the afternoon. And then the rest of the day, I will drink diet soda, and I don't drink nearly as much as I used to. I'm probably, I usually have a 2-liter bottle available, and that usually takes me 2 days to finish off, which is still a liter of diet soda a day. And sometimes it's less than that, sometimes it's more than that, but that's about how much I'm drinking because, I'm still addicted to caffeine and I'm not ready to shake that off yet. Eventually I will be, but, I'm getting closer and closer. I'm cutting back. I mean, compared to how much caffeine I used to take in, my 1.5 to 2 cups of coffee a day plus the diet soda. Yeah, it still seems like a lot, doesn't it? Yeah, it's a lot, but it's less than I used to drink. But if I don't get a little bit of caffeine in the evenings, then, it's just not good for me. As in, I get headaches and I get really lethargic and I find that the diet soda is better as a caffeine source in the evening than the coffee is, because then the coffee is too much caffeine. It keeps me awake. So anyway, I have this system worked out. Probably not healthy. Don't care. It's what I'm using. 28. All right. 28 is from, oh, let's see who it is this time. It's from someone named Ronster. And this Ronster fella says, dollar for dollar, what has your best game investment been? Please give RPG and non-RPG answers. Dollar for dollar, Paranoia has given me my greatest game investment. And if you are looking at buying Paranoia for yourself, do anything in your power to buy Paranoia Second Edition. Okay? Paranoia Second Edition, and then if you want to get, if you can find the supplement Acute Paranoia to go with it, that's all you'll ever need is those two books. All right? You can, there's other stuff out there. There's a robot supplement, and there's a, and, but the amount of money I've spent on Paranoia as a role-playing game compared to the amount of hours I've played Paranoia, it is, the investment was low, all right? Especially because I use Paranoia Second Edition. I got those two books. I probably bought another book or two at full price back when the system first came out. And then later, I got a massive sale when West End Games was going out of business. Massive sale where I bought a ton of other Second Edition Paranoia books. And it was incredible. Absolutely incredible. I got a ton of them for cheap. I mean, I think I paid like, you know, $36, and I wound up getting like 10 or 12 source books that I had never seen before. And so as far as role-playing games go, Paranoia has been a low investment game that has paid huge dividends because I'm playing Paranoia right now. All right. I play a regular game of Paranoia every year or two for my, you know, entire adult life. This has been awesome. I love Paranoia. I've gotten so many games out of it, so much entertainment out of it. Now, Pathfinder is a close second, but, you know, and I've probably played Pathfinder more than I have played Paranoia in terms of absolute hours of entertainment, probably. And that is largely due to the fact that, look, I've run how many games with my kids over the years, plus I've been playing, you know, 3 to 4 hours every other Thursday for the last 3 years. Actually have a regular group going, the whole business. But Pathfinder, I've spent a lot more money on. All right. Pathfinder has a lot more source books. They're a lot more expensive. I've spent, and I continue to spend money on Pathfinder, and I'm fine with that. I love giving Paizo money so that they keep making great stuff for me. And this summer at Gen Con 2017, they're going to be coming out with Starfinder, and I am going to pump some dollars into Starfinder because I can't wait to try it out. All right. I love Paizo. I love what they're doing with the system. I will love to try out their sci-fi version. It's awesome stuff. But Paranoia is absolutely dollar for dollar my best investment. Now, as far as other games, well, I don't know. Look, I've spent a fair amount on Munchkin, but I've played a lot of Munchkin. Simon's Cat? Simon's Cat is probably my best investment. Because Simon's Cat, I break out for everybody. Everybody gets to play Simon's Cat. And, you know, what was it, $8, $9 to get that deck? But, you know, Battlesheep, same thing. I break out Battlesheep for everybody. And that was a $15 game from Blue Orange. I mean, these are great games. Man, I don't know. I mean, what, Carcassonne? Although Carcassonne I've spent more on because I bought a couple of expansions for that one. So that's not the same thing. But yeah, but a good simple game that all ages can play, easy to understand, gets people hooked. Yeah, you can't go wrong with that. So, you know, when it comes to something like Simon's Cat, like Battlesheep, like Flux even. Flux is a nice, simple card game. Zombie Dice. Oh, you know what? I have probably played more Zombie Dice with people than just about anything else. I've been breaking out Zombie Dice for years, even before I got on this I'm so in love with board games kick the last couple of years. I've always had Zombie Dice. So Zombie Dice is probably the one I've played more than anything for the low-cost investment. What did I pay for my Zombie Dice? Was it $8? Was it 12, 15? I don't remember. But Zombie Dice was super cheap, and I've been doing that one for years and years and years. So, for what it's worth. Uh-oh. Aiden's home. Quick. Don't let him know you're here. Hi, Aiden. How are you? How was work?
Who are you talking to?
No, nobody. Was Logan good? I mean, did you have a big turnout for Logan?
No.
Really?
There were Okay.
Well, hold on. He's actually over there. He's
reviewing. Oh, you're still recording. Oh my god.
He's reviewing Logan. So
I didn't watch Logan.
All right, just a second. Let me pause, and then I will explain what's going on in a minute. All right, sorry for all that confusion. He was reporting to me, because he just got home from the theater, that even though Logan reported a $33 million Friday, and even though Logan is getting awesome reviews, and that $33 million Friday, what does that translate into? Like a $75 million weekend it should be? He said, in our local theater at least, Sunday night was dead. Sunday night dead, even though all of our local colleges are going on spring break, starting now. So none of the college kids have school tomorrow. And yet, he said they're running Logan in two theaters and quite literally had eight people come see Logan tonight.
And that was everyone who went to the theater!
And those eight people were the only eight people in the theater all night long. So... that's crazy. Absolutely crazy. So that's why he's home early. Not that you guys know what time it is now, but, you know, it's 10 till 11. How's that? So, that's weird. But, again, my brother went and saw Logan. Everyone I know who on Facebook who has reported seeing Logan has reported that it is fantastic. Which, this movie wasn't even really much on my radar. I wasn't terribly excited about seeing it. But now I am? Great. Thanks, guys. So... I'm going to have to go see that, I suppose. Anyway, where did I just leave off? Oh, no, I finished answering that question. 93 is from... Oh, let's see. Is it... It's Zimny. Oh, that's not what I was expecting at all. Hi, Zim. Zim says, isn't it annoying how other people want water temperature in the shower to be different from how you like it? And then you need to fiddle around to get it perfect? But that never works because the design of the gauges are stupid, so you end up with it either being way too hot or way too cold. All right, yes. Look, it's annoying that there are people in the world who have preferences different than mine. I completely agree with you. Those people are all stupid. Now, having said that, my personal shower here at home, despite the fact that we share it amongst five people, six when Jacob's home, we have two separate knobs for hot and cold, and we both have to turn both of them up from zero, in order to adjust your water to the right temperature. And so therefore, I have to adjust my water from zero to the correct temperature every single time I get in. So I don't relate to your problem here. I understand that when I get into a hotel shower, it is kind of nice. If I am ever in a hotel for more than a single night and, you know, they've got the little adjustable knob that, you know, you set it for the right balance of hot and cold and then you just pull the knob up, boom, perfect temperature. Wouldn't it be great to step into that every single day, perfect temperature, because you just pull the knob right there. It's already set for your temp. But how often am I ever in a hotel room for more than a night at a time, right? So it just doesn't happen. So hold on. My son is bothering me. He's buying Breath of the Wild for the Wii U, and he has to enter the code for it that he purchased. And he's just impressed that the code intentionally does not include the letters I, O, or Z. They're not even available on the keyboard because I, O, and Z are too easily confused with 1, 0, and 2, apparently. And he thought that was pretty awesome. Now, I only know this from dealing with barcodes on Dell computers, because we have a lot of Dell computers at work. And I'll tell you that, yes, they also avoid the letter I, the letter O, and, oh, I get a lot of Zs, though. We get a lot of Zs, but I and O are right out. So I get it. So yes, I understand Zim and I can see how that would be annoying, but it doesn't affect me because again, my shower is old fashioned and has to be adjusted from zero. So, you know, for what it's worth. 72. 72 is a number that is somewhere on my chart here. Ah, there it is. Hey, Ronster again. Hey, Ron. Ron says, if you played Dole in Paranoia, what would you have done differently? All right, you know what? This is a trick question, dude. I am not feeding into your insecurities, all right? Right, Dole, we in our last game of Paranoia, Dole R Us, Dole was Ron's character, and Ron was a werewolf, and Ron slaughtered lots and lots of people. And ultimately, it got him killed many times over. And so Ron, that being his first game of Paranoia, is asking me how I would have played Dole differently. Ostensibly, maybe he's just looking for a little advice here, but, you know, Ron, you did awesome. And how I would have played it, would have been very different from you. Absolutely would have been very different from what you did. But, you know, just because my gameplay for Paranoia is more attuned towards, you know, survival, doesn't make it any more fun or better. So therefore, all right, look, what would I have done differently? Okay, no, you know what? The slaughtering of people and then getting killed for it, I probably would have done some of that. Maybe not in the same context you did. Maybe I wouldn't have opened it all up so soon, been so eager to just wolf out at every opportunity. I may not have gone that far, but I would have done some slaughter. Because, you know, you're a werewolf. Come on, you got to use that, right? No, what I would not have done is I would not have trusted people. You were way too willing to open up to, like, Nattied. Nattied in this game was just trouble from the very beginning. You guys got to understand, if you've never played Paranoia, Paranoia is set in a future where everybody has multiple clones, so people die a lot, but, you know, you have a backup clone that gets launched for you, and you basically get six lives before you're finally out. And so, you know, again, I wouldn't have trusted so easily. I wouldn't have, like, just gone spilling information about my mutant power and my secret goals and my others. I wouldn't have done that part. I would have kept that a little closer to the vest. But, you know, hey, look, the way you played it, made for an awesome story. It made me laugh constantly, and I was having a really good time with you guys. So yeah, you know, maybe I would have waited a little bit longer for the slaughter. Maybe I wouldn't have trusted so easily. But you know what? It all played out super well. And again, as I said when I reviewed this very Paranoia game several episodes ago, I have never played Paranoia where people got emotionally invested in their characters. We have just always played it where, I mean, yes, there's always been some level of investment, and you're always upset that first clone that you lose. That always sucks. But the idea of having a real set of character arcs and stories where you're actually invested in one another, some cooperation, some teamwork where you can make that happen and you actually give a crap about the other players. We've always viewed Paranoia as, you know, everyone's just so expendable. It's just, you don't get all touchy feely about someone who's expendable, right? These are red shirts. You throw them away. And so the fact that you guys didn't know what the expectations and rules were and you played it completely differently made for a better game, made for a lot more fun. It was a different type of Paranoia fun than I've ever had before. So I really enjoyed it. So I'm not going to knock anything you guys did. Never mind. I'm not going to say anything. Let's just move on. 37. And 37 is going to be about the end of it because it has been a long week. So let's see who we got here. 37 is from, hey, this one's from Kyle. And Kyle says, I was looking for an antiquated, wait, hold on. Oh, okay. I was looking for an antiquated dork saying that I could use instead of, oh, shots fired. I decided to go with the following, said in a very Victorian dandy voice. Ooh, it appears you've received a sound drubbing. And then followed by a laugh. Ooh, ha, 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 something. I'm sure I'm not doing that laugh right. I didn't do that justice, but it appears you've received a sound drubbing. What do you think? If I send you a wave file, could you play it as a bumper after you've done a nerd rage? Oh my God. Oh my. Yes. 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 Of course I would play it after my nerd rages. That would be amazing. Dude. Yes. Yes. I fully approve of this one. I, encourage you to make use of that in real life. And I encourage you to send me a WAV file any sound file. I don't give a crap. You include that. I will play it after my nerd rages. I absolutely will. And, I will double your royalty checks that you already get for these episodes. So, for those of you who didn't know, yeah, I have to pay Kyle royalties for all of my episodes because the opening where it says Oppenheimer, that's Kyle's voice. So, yeah, he demands a few pennies for every download. Sick, but that's the way the rules work. So, you know what? Seriously, you give me a sound drubbing WAV file, double your money. All right, I'm in on this. And then that's it. I'm going to turn it over to GLaDOS. She's going to give us a recap of this week's episode.
Remember when the platform was sliding into the fire pit and I said goodbye, and you were like,
no way.
And then I was all, we pretended we were going to murder you.
That was great.
This podcast is copyright 2017 by Nerd Pride Radio. The opening and closing theme is Death Metal Disco by Ian Kronk. My only bumper music this week was Fingertips by They Might Be Giants. All the songs I use are available on iTunes. Check them out, buy them, enjoy them. I wouldn't put them in my podcast if I didn't love them. Don't forget, my podcast is a proud member of the Nerd Pride Radio Network. Nerd Pride Network, damn. Angry Geeks Versus, Me Like Trivia, and of course, Nerd Pride Radio itself. Quality nerd podcasting from quality nerd people. If you want to do something nice for my podcast, what can you do? Go on. That's right. Recommend it to your friends. If you're enjoying this, come on, spread the word. Let other people enjoy it as well. Word of mouth is my bread and butter, people. Remember, I am always looking for you guys to do my work for me. Don't forget to send me questions and topics for the Podomatic. Watch out every week on the forums and on Facebook for listener betrayal. And if you have a really interesting nerd fact about an upcoming episode number, like Kaz did for this week's 176, send it to me and save me all that grueling research. My contact information. Let's see, mike@nerdprideradio.com, @nerdprideradio on Twitter, facebook.com/nerdprideradio. But to be completely honest, the very best way to talk to me is come sign up for my forums at nerdprideradio.com/nerds. You sign up there, send me a message. We will hang out together and become best friends in the world. We'll have fun. And now it's time for listener betrayal. Before I start recording every podcast, I go out to my my Facebook page and my forums, and I post up. I'm sorry, I am completely off my game here. Before I start recording every cast, I go out to the internet, to my Facebook page, and I'm still not doing it right. Man, normally this is one of the areas of the thing I don't have a regular script for, and yet I've gotten pretty consistent about it. Doesn't matter. I go out before I start recording. I post up to you guys, hey, I'm recording now. Anything you want to add to it, you just share right there, and I will read it off at the end of the cast, which is what I'm doing right now. There, close enough. That was pretty smooth, right? No one will notice. Nailed it. All right. And sadly, there's no listener betrayal tonight on Facebook. None whatsoever. So let's go on over to my forums. And on my forums, looks like, yep, it's just Kaz. So Kaz says, I know Cars is not your favorite Pixar movie, but imagine you are a vehicle in that universe. What are you? I am a full-sized sedan. I am not a luxury car, but kind of a nice workhorse vehicle that it's your family sedan. It's built for getting around five people at a time. You know what? Six or seven if you guys want to squeeze in a little bit. All right. I am a nice, big, solid four-door vehicle. All right. But the kind of vehicle that they almost don't even make anymore, man. You remember the really big ones back in the day? Yeah, like that. All right. I don't know year, make, model. I'm not a car guy, but I'm telling you, that's who I am. All right. Now, the next thing for this is all from Kaz. Kaz says, give us a promotional spiel for Diet Dr. Pepper. Well, I think I've already done that this episode, but let me try again. Diet Dr. Pepper. Sure. Sure, it's going to up your sugar craving, but it's a nice slow flow of caffeine without any of those pesky calories. And that's what you're really looking for. When coffee's too much and you don't mind a little bit of sugar craving, oh, Diet Dr. Pepper, it's the spot. There you go. Have you seen the new Deadpool 2 teaser? No. No, I have not. I have been really avoiding most teasers and trailers. I haven't watched anything for Star Wars 8. I haven't watched anything for Deadpool. I haven't watched any of them. I've been avoiding them. I don't know if that's going to, you know, increase my enjoyment of these movies. But you know, even little things like Get Out. I really want to see Get Out. No, they run Logan on two screens here this week. They run whatever, what's the new religious movie that came out this weekend? They ran that on two screens and they don't bring me Get Out. I get it. They didn't get Out on the first weekend because they didn't know it was going to be as big as it was. But the second weekend and we still don't get it. I'm a little upset. But yeah, I didn't watch any of the trailers for that either. I see a couple of ads and then once I realize I'm interested in the movie, I'm done. I don't want to know anything else. I've been really avoiding them. And again, I don't know if it helps me. I don't know if it's going to make me like the movie anymore or not, but it's a thing I do. So he follows up, have you seen the new Deadpool 2 teaser with, what did you think of Ryan Reynolds' fine ass? Dude, Ryan Reynolds is a hunk of meat, isn't he? Oh, man. Guy is so good looking. And I'm telling you, what luck that he got Deadpool. Well, luck. He worked his ass off to get Deadpool. He worked his fine, fine ass off to get Deadpool. But here's the thing, is that Ryan Reynolds is really, really good at playing that one smart-ass Ryan Reynolds character, all right? Ryan Reynolds is really, really good at playing Van Wilder. And that's really where his strength lies. And by playing Deadpool, he gets to play Van Wilder as a superhero, as an R-rated superhero. Oh, couldn't get any better for Ryan Reynolds. I mean, and don't think this is me belittling Ryan Reynolds. I love the man. I think he's awesome. But I also think that for the most part, his biggest strength is playing that character. And so the fact that that character lines up so well with Deadpool, is just beautiful serendipity. I love that movie and I love Ryan Reynolds for doing it. So there you go. Kaz continues. There's rumors of a Hellraiser reboot. Yeah, I know. Heard that. What 80s intellectual property would you revamp for today's audience? Boy, that is a tough one. I am getting tired of the reboots and revamps. I'm not a big fan of the reboots. I mean, not that they're bad necessarily. I mean, some of them are. I mean, look, Total Recall kind of fell flat. RoboCop, don't really care. There's a lot of these that, you know what, leave well enough alone, I suppose. Not that having the new one hurts anything necessarily, but, oh man, they just don't get my motor running. You know what I'm saying? But if I had to bring back an 80s intellectual property, to be redone for a modern audience, what would I do? I think it needs to be one that hasn't aged very well. So, oh man, I can't stall long enough to think of something. So I'm just going to pause it. Got it. You know what I think I'd do? See, pausing it was worth it this time. I paused. I got a drink of some Diet Dr. Pepper, cleared my head. Lost Boys. Hear me out. Yeah, haven't we done enough of the vampires? We have. But I loved the movie Lost Boys. Lost Boys hit me at the perfect age, and it just, man, there was something so cool about it. So badass about it. Now, what I want to do is a Lost Boys, the same kind of concept, except, you know, we might want to bring in Lost Boys and girls. It doesn't have to be all boys this time. The head vampire doesn't have to be a dude. But it could be. It makes no difference, all right? But we can modernize this thing. And here's where it gets good, is for a 2017 audience. what we do is we play off of the romantic vampires, because vampires have become the heroes over the last 30 years, all right? Lost Boys is one of the last big vampire movies in an era where vampires were still the bad guy. You know what I mean? And now vampires are, I mean, Jesus Christ, we've got so many teenage vampires and vampire schools and vampire, I mean, it's Twilight and it's the originals and it's, I mean, there's so much, the Vampire Diaries, the, so what if we go back to the Lost Boys and we play up that image, all right? We make them out to be romantic, even as our real protagonists of the story start to figure out what's going on. You know, there's a dark seduction here that, maybe these guys aren't so bad. Maybe this is the life we want to lead. Maybe this is, and it turns out that, yeah, but no, they're evil. They're evil, bloodthirsty, horrible murderers. All right. And by the very end of it, yeah, we turn into a, oh God. And Corey Feldman has to make a cameo in this thing. But we get our Goonies style dorks to get in there and lead the vampire hunt and everything, of course, gets turned on its ear, and then, of course, by the end, we kill the head vampire, and all the vampires die, and the good guys win. I mean, you can play that all out, but again, I want to play it up like it looks like you might want to be rooting for the vampires at some point, because, you know, that's what we do nowadays. We root for the vampires, but then it turns out that no, they're just frickin' evil. Vampires are not, you know, they try and play up that image. They try and get by on it. But there's just no doing it. They're just evil. They're irredeemable, and we gotta kill them. Oh wait, no, Blade may be the last of the vampires are pure evil, maybe, because Underworld started playing into the whole. I mean, they were still pretty bad in their own way. But there were some good guys and there were some bad guys and there was the politics of it. And then, sorry, Aiden just came in. But yeah, see, there was that evolution. And I think it was due to, Interview with a Vampire had some impetus in this. Because Interview came out in, what was that, 78? 80? I mean, Vampire was early. Interview with a Vampire was early. And because of that, and because of, Vampire, the role-playing game, Vampire the Masquerade, Vampire, anyway, whatever the Vampire role-playing game was, that one started bringing in the politics of it. And we started getting this very romanticized image of vampires and playing into vampire culture, goth culture, where they overlapped, we start getting this more romanticized version of it until finally they just became the stars of teen romance novels. I mean, this is the ultimate evolution of them. And I really think redoing Lost Boys and bringing it back, oh, I would love that. Have I rambled on a little too much about that? Maybe, but I think that would be really cool. All right. Last question from Kaz. Last question of listener betrayal, in fact. Says, what is your over-under on Trump making it through this year without coming under investigation? It depends on a lot of factors. And, all right, how hard are the Republicans willing to work to continue covering for a man that they know needs investigating? They know, how much are they willing to compromise their own morals and their own stated positions to not investigate a president who, were he the other party, would have been investigated already? I mean, look, they were willing to drop everything and investigate Hillary how many times when she was just Secretary of State and the next likely candidate for Democratic candidate for president. And they were willing to investigate her a million times over, only to have her proven not guilty of anything illegal. Maybe a little unethical and maybe a little careless and maybe a little stupid with the emails, but nothing illegal. There was never anything, any actual wrongdoing. And And these Republicans were willing to investigate her constantly simply because she was probably going to be the next Democratic candidate for president, which she was. And now they have Trump, who has mountains of shit on him. Mountains. His conflict of interest list just keeps growing. And they're still not willing to investigate. It's not important to them. Look, this is all just a witch hunt. Seriously. All right. So how long are the Republicans going to keep that up? Because it costs them not much right now, but it will. And the other side of this is how long before somebody turns up something that simply can't be ignored anymore? Because that's what's going to, ultimately for me, I think that's what's going to happen first. I don't think the Republicans are going to cave. I don't think they'll get tired of him. They may have their problems with him, but he's useful. I think it's going to be some investigative reporter who comes up with irrefutable evidence and some investigative reporter who really does their homework and comes up with something that just can't be denied anymore. And I think that will happen. I think somebody, because there's so much there, so much. Oh my God, there is so much. And it's not just us. It is European intelligence agencies. It is our intelligence agencies. It is investigative reporters. There are thousands of investigative reporters out there right now, many of them looking into this and would give their right arm for that smoking gun. All right. They are begging for it. They will find it. All right. And I think it's going to happen. I think it is inevitable. And I'm sure Russia is doing their best to help cover this up. But it's going to happen. And then when it does, oh man, how can you not investigate? But we'll see. We'll see. So my over-under on Trump making it through this year without coming under investigation. Look, he is 6 weeks in and he's in it up to his thighs already. I mean, it's past knee deep. I just don't see, after 6 weeks of this, I cannot see him lasting out the rest of the year without finally coming under investigation. Now, will he come under investigation and they'll basically do it as a Senate investigation and the Republicans will have control of the Senate and thus declare him, oh, not guilty of anything terrible? You know what? Slap on the wrist. You guys should know better. Let's move on. Is it possible? Possible. But there's going to be an investigation. There has to be an investigation. Honestly, I am putting the odds at, I'm going to say 8-1 against not coming under investigation this year. Maybe I should go higher than that, but eight to one against. I'm giving it a good 85-90% chance that, yeah, he's getting investigated this year. But you know, maybe that's just my optimism speaking. I don't know. Either way, I would just like them to investigate. I would like for somebody to look into what's going on and be able to tell us, well, look, here's his tax returns. He didn't have any ties to Russia. Well, that would be cool. I don't believe it, but you know, that's not how it's going to go down, but wouldn't it be great if it did. You know, if we find out that really this is all just some weird coincidence, and the fact that he's got how many of his people connected to his campaign talk to Russian agents, Russian officials during the campaign, and all of them just happened to forget about it when questioned under oath. And even when they did remember it, all of them can't seem to remember exactly what they may have talked about. I mean, look, one person says, oh shoot, yeah, no, that slipped my mind, I forgot about that one. Or one person comes forward and says, well, I don't remember what we talked about, there's so much stuff, I don't know. All right. But when it's everybody lies about it. Not going to say they're lying. Everybody has the same story of, oh yeah, I forgot about that meeting. Oh yeah, I did meet with the Russians. I can't remember what we talked about. Everybody's got that same story. Why? Why? I mean, either they're covering something up, or someone at the top end was ordering them to cover it up because they thought it looked, I mean, because there's a smoking gun there, or they just thought it looked so suspicious that they felt it was better to cover it up than to come clean about our completely innocent connections to, yeah, whatever. It's all going to come out. I didn't want to end on this rant. I mean, you know, that's your question. That's a good one, but, you know what? Here. There we go. 97. We already rolled that twice. All right, 83. We'll end on 83. And that one is... 83 is from Ronster. Okay. Ronster says, what will happen to Dole in the R&D labs of the complex? Will his clone ever be seen again? Oh, no. No, no. You see, Dole has multiple clones of Dole, were caught being a werewolf, both on camera and by eyewitnesses, by the ATM, bot camera, everybody saw him wolf out. Everybody knows he's a werewolf. So therefore, no version of Dole will ever be seen again. He's been sent down to R&D, and at least one of his clones has already been dissected. Did he have more than one left over? Yeah, because if he only had one left, that one's already dead and dissected, and his genes are being sequenced, and they're already looking at ways to weaponize this. No, Dole is never coming back. No version of Dole is ever coming back. You may eventually see red-haired wolves prowling Alpha Complex, working for internal security or something like that, but... Yeah, no, Dole himself is just gone, man. Sorry. Yeah, that's what happens when you wolf out too much. It's eventually they come for you in the middle of the night. Or, you know, at debriefing. They don't even have to wait till the middle of the night. They'll just come get you. And then you're gone for good. They will disappear you because that's what they're good at. So, all right, there. Now we're done. That's a much more positive note, right? Okay. As always, you guys are awesome. Thank you for joining me. I love you. I love you. I love you. You guys are great. Seriously. Come back and join me next week. We'll have another fun-filled, exciting episode. Same bat time, same bat channel, right? Oh, I was supposed to say goodnight, R2, and then he would do that. There you go. Goodnight, R2.